Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Davies Thameside Walk Tour.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you are listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 296, Davies Thameside Walk. Last Saturday, our production manager, Davey Naylor, and his wife, Catherine, took Reed and I and our families for a three-hour walk along the south side of the Thames Embankment from Vauxhall Bridge to Borough Market at London Bridge, giving us all a history lesson and showing us sights many of us had never seen. As the South Bank carousel music played, we Yankee Doodles came to London and started by questioning Davey's credentials.
David, do you actually have any expertise or training or knowledge to be giving these tours?
No, not at all. Not at all.
But you're a history nerd.
Yes, a bit of a nerd. Yes, we're just walking past the main entrance to MI6.
Oh, it looks very innocuous.
85 Vauxhall Cross, it's told, yes. You can't tell. And the fact that it's been shown in lots of films as the head of the MI6.
Right.
But it's a very imposing building.
It is.
Well, yeah, it doesn't look suspicious at all with all the security cameras and the spiked bars and the security gates. I'm happy to see no armed guards here, though. That's a good sign.
No, they don't have any armed guards, because when you come past, there's obviously no terrorism whatsoever during the weekends. I mean, you know, who would do that?
Duh.
So, you know, you don't need any guards over the weekend. But during the day, on weekdays,
yeah,
there are lots of guards around. But no, they don't have any weapons or anything like that. They're more just glorified security guards.
Because MI5 is kind of FBI, right?
MI is military intelligence.
Yeah,
but right. It started in the war. There was lots of different things. All the numbers were used. Some of them don't exist anymore, like aerial photography in the First World War, when they used to do all the aerial photography.
Yeah.
That was kind of like MI7 or something like that.
NASA.
Yeah. So the only two that really exist are MI5 or MI6. MI5 we'll see a bit later on. It's across the river. This is MI6. But apparently, if you go up to the front desk here and say, is this MI6? They say, no, don't know what you're talking about, sir.
Can I go and try that?
You can do, yeah.
Let's send the Irish woman over to ask that.
Yeah. Although I think it's closed on the weekend.
And isn't MI4 the road we took to Wales that time?
Yes. Yeah, that's right, yes. No, it's MFI.
Yeah,
nice furniture. Yes.
Something like that.
All right, now, on your left over here, you can't see it behind it. Do you see where the Union Jack flag is?
Yeah.
Yes.
That is Tate Britain.
Ah.
Tate was a, as in from the sugar, it was the sugar baron, Tate and Lyle.
Okay.
That Tate, basically. He was very philanthropic, and he built lots of libraries and museums in London, and the Tate Gallery was built there on the ruins of what was called the Millbank Penitentiary. Which was a very famous building in the 1820s through 1890s, because that was the deporting point of all the convicts that went to Australia, New Zealand, a few to Canada. Just about every single convict who was sent to Australia, New Zealand and other parts of the world went from here and went from those steps down the Thames. And there is an etymological story, I don't know if it's true, but that the word pom, as in pommy,
mm-hmm.
comes from here, which means prisoner of Millbank.
Oh. Which means what?
Prisoner of Millbank.
Oh.
But I'm not too sure that's true. I think it's derived from pomegranate, which is what the same way the English people call limeys, because they used to have pomegranate fruit, stuff like that, on the boats.
Uh-huh.
You see, so that's where.
So
I think
Aussies
it comes
are
from.
Called palms.
No, the Aussies call the Brits poms.
Oh, I see.
Basically, pommies, basically. But it's an interesting little backward entomology thing. Incidentally, as well, much of Tate Britain that is still there, the stone that they used. Well, they rebuilt in the 1890s from when they knocked down the Millbank Penitentiary, Millbank Prison.
Oh.
They reused all the stonework to build most of the Tate Britain.
Nice. I guess I wasn't aware that they did all that long ago. That always seemed to be like a 20th century thing, but no, it was a 19th century thing.
Create
the Thames.
Yes. This is Lambeth Bridge here.
Lambeth.
It's one of the youngest bridges. It was only built in the 1920s.
Oh.
Lambeth Bridge.
Bridge, which is very nice.
Which is, yes, it's the latest. Well, actually, no, there's the Queen Elizabeth Bridge, which used to be the Hungerford Bridge, but it got rebuilt in 2000.
What's the bridge near Big Ben? That's Parliament Bridge, isn't it?
No, that's Westminster Bridge.
Westminster Bridge, okay, right.
Have you tried a Boris bike yet? Here they are.
Oh my God, I want the Boris bike for Hyde Park.
Well, they're called Barclays Hire bikes, really. But you know, a lot of people, you'll notice some people put some rather naughty stickers over them sometimes, because Barclays obviously don't get a very good rep around here.
But this seems like a really cool idea.
The idea, well, basically it was the outgoing mayor, Ken Livingstone, who came up with the idea, but they're called Boris bikes because of the incumbent mayor, really.
Right.
I mean, it's great. I mean, you can hire them. All you've got to do is register a credit card with them, and you can actually cycle around mostly for free, as long as your journey is not too far. You can go up to about half an hour journey, and that will probably get you through most of the West End or most of the city, and it's a great way of getting about. And there's hundreds of docking stations that you take your bike from, put in a PIN number, take your bike, and then cycle over to the next one and stick it in, and then you can leave it. Right. On your right here is called Lambeth Palace. It's one of the very, very, very old buildings, and it is the official home of Archbishop Beardy.
Is that his official name?
Yes. The Archbishop of Canterbury. It's his official home. And
His official home is not in Canterbury.
No, it's been here since I can't remember when.
Before you were born.
Well, the Archbishop of Canterbury is the kind of like the head of the the Queen is the head of the
Church of England.
Church of England, but he's kind of like the first primate, I believe, of all England.
Because left and right shoulder of.
Because I think if I now, correct me if I'm wrong, when we were in York, I think the Archbishop of York, who is second in command, he is primate of England, and the Archbishop of Canterbury is primate of all England. I don't quite know why that is the case, but one outranks the other. But most definitely, before the Thames was kind of like regulated and kind of tidied up and having these wonderful Victorian kind of embankments, the Thames was very sloppy, and it went right up to the wall of Lambeth Palace.
Well, we heard a little bit about this yesterday. The big stink,
and there was a chap called Bazalgette, wonderfully named chap called Bazalgette, who was tasked in the 1860s, I think, tidy up the
the engineer?
He was the engineer who, and he built basically these embankments, basically to made the river a lot thinner, and of course, you know, built the great sewage network that actually London is quite famous for. It was one of the very first sewage networks, and it still exists.
Even though the Romans get all the credit.
The Romans do get all the credit, yes, poor chaps. But he was predominantly the guy who you know, reduced the big stink, basically. And and of course, that was a time when they were actually building all lots of tube lines and stuff like that. So places like this is Albert Embankment, and you've kind of got, you know,
Albert as in Victoria's Albert.
Correct, yes. And have you got Victoria Embankment on the other side?
Oh, right, of course. Or as we say in France, embankment.
Yes, embankment. You can just see behind the Palace of Westminster Cathedral, Westminster Abbey, actually. No, it's not a cathedral, it's an abbey. They're the white towers behind. The Palace of Westminster was built from 1840 to 1870. It took 30-odd years. Although it did recently have its 150th anniversary last year. Big Ben had its anniversary because the tower was finished a lot longer before they finished the rest of it. I believe it's called a perpendicular Gothic style. Don't ask me what that is. Basically because the original, I wouldn't say it was original because there have been several palaces of Westminster on this site, but the last Palace of Westminster burned down in 1836. And during that time, all the MPs had to go to places like Buckingham Palace to have all their, you know,
that was that
meetings.
Whole V for Vendetta thing, right?
Yes.
Right, yes.
Yeah. And this was built by a chap called Charles Barry, who later obviously became Sir Charles Barry. He rebuilt the House of Parliament in this style. This big tower here with the flag is the Victoria Tower. Then you have the clock tower.
Mm-hmm.
It's not called Big Ben. Big Ben is actually the big bell at the north end.
Yeah, Big Ben is the bell, not the clock.
It's the bell, yes. It's just called the clock tower, although I think this year it's going to be renamed Elizabeth Tower in honour of the Queen's Diamond Jubilee.
Oh, they should call it Big Liz.
Big Liz.
Come on.
Big Liz.
They've got to.
And actually...
I saw this documentary called Sherlock Holmes, that where I've learned that there's a tunnel that goes from the Houses of Parliament straight to London Bridge. Did you see
really?
That? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh, yes. Yes, Yes. The Guy Ritchie film, there must be, yes. And it must be some sort of rail network, because they managed to get there in about 2 seconds. So
yes, exactly.
Which is remarkable, because it's about 2 miles away.
It's odd that it's playing Frère Jacques.
As Big Ben strikes noon, welcome to London, everyone.
I am Jenny Barnett from BBC London 94.9, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We have 3 weeks left of our West End London 2012 Olympics run of The Complete World of Sports Abridged at the Arts Theatre. We run here until August 25th, then head home to tour the special election edition of The Complete History of America Abridged and The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged this fall and winter of 2012. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for The Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information.
Just to this side of the bridge is where the old Roman road, which to Canterbury went, which is the A2, follows the old Roman road and used to come into London, and it used to be a fording point across the Thames here. And apparently so, there is a raised part of... ground underneath here, and there was a story, I don't know if this is true or not, or it's just apocryphal, of Victorian times, of a very, very tall MP who wagered a friend that at low tide he could not walk across the Thames. What his friend did not know, that this chap, this very tall MP, knew that there was a raised part of ground where the old Roman ford used to go across.
Uh-huh.
And at very low tide, or some very low spring tide, he did manage to walk across the Thames without keeping his hat on. I think that was the thing, you know, he wouldn't lose his hat. He wouldn't float away, so and he won his bet. Apparently, so the story goes. Here we are, just going underneath the London Eye, which was built for the millennium, 2000. Obviously, everybody knows what that means. I don't know why I needed to say it twice. I'm turning into Alan Partridge. It has, I don't know how many pods, 24 pods, I think. I can't remember now. And it goes around. It takes about 50 minutes to go round. And you get spectacular views of the London skyline. I've been up twice during the day and once at night, and I can thoroughly recommend it. Anyone visiting London,
right,
go on the London Eye. It's quite beautiful.
Particularly at night. I would recommend at night.
Really? Yeah, I kind of like the daytime, because I like looking at all the buildings, of course, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's true.
You can't quite see all of that at night, but it is quite spectacular at night as well. But it is a very, very beautiful thing. And it was only supposed to be a temporary structure, but I think now they're going to make it permanent. I mean, it's been here for 12 years now, and it's
just
as popular as ever. So,
yeah.
And it's one thing that makes, you know, another addition to the beautiful London skyline.
Very distinctive. Although York has its own little mini York Eye.
Yes. Well, lots of cities now have them. I think Glasgow has one. I think Manchester has one. Not quite as... I think Vienna have just recently built one, you know, I think.
And why Vienna made a big mistake, though, calling it the London Eye, though.
That's true, yes.
We went on the Singapore Flyer 2 or 3 years ago.
And is that the London... That's like the London Eye.
It's like the London Eye.
Yeah. Oh, but they said it's taller.
Well, they said it's taller. And also, they changed the direction of it for feng shui reasons.
Oh,
that it turned one direction, and they felt it was bringing Singapore bad luck because of the feng shui, so they re-engineered the whole thing so it would turn in the opposite direction.
It was quite... watching this being built, when I was... I would come in on the train across Charing Cross Bridge here during the time when this was built. And when they brought it up the Thames on barges and they laid it flat and then hoisted it up slowly over about a month. They did a couple of feet a day, because that's how long it would take to raise it up.
Right.
They raised the whole thing up, and it was quite a beautiful sight watching it every day, seeing it move a few inch after inch. But this is one of the original Charing Cross Bridge, was one of Isambard Kingdom Brunel, or Kenneth Branagh, Abraham Lincoln.
Yes, right, as we saw in the opening
Olympic
ceremony.
Opening ceremony. He was one of his very early projects, and one of the pillars, I think, is still here from the original bridge.
Okay.
We're getting now into...
These are the train tracks that take the trains into Charing Cross Station.
That's correct. Charing Cross Station is just over the river there. Just on the right here, we're coming up to the Hayward Gallery and the Purcell Rooms, and a bit further on, we'll see the National Theatre. Mm-hmm. But yes, this is where Annie McDowell and Hugh Grant had their little bit.
Famously quoted the Partridge Family.
That's correct, yes. Okay. Festival Hall just here, which was built for the Festival of Britain in the 1950s or something. I can't quite remember exactly.
Which is why that has that distinctive, lovely 50s architecture.
Yes.
Cement.
Lovely, yes. Yes, and of course the National Theatre, which is one of the most beautiful buildings in all whole of London. it's a monstrous carbuncle, I believe, is what... Prince Charles called it. Was it that? Oh, something else. I can't remember. on the other side of the river, you've got the Cleopatra's Needle over there, which was spent 20 years at the bottom of the Bay of Biscay.
Oh, wow.
Because when they brought it over from Egypt, the boat sank in a storm off the Bay of Biscay.
Which is where?
Between France and Spain.
Okay.
And I think it was about 20 years, and they went down and got it again later, and they came back and they put it there. And if you were to go over there, you'll see there's a hell of a lot of damage. There's lots of big holes in the iron things, and that's World War II bomb damage, basically. It was severely damaged during the war. It was more damaged during the war than the 20 years it spent... the bomb of the Bay of Biscay, or indeed, you know, the 2,000 years it spent in
Alexandria.
As you can see, it's very, very busy. This is South Bank. It's one of the most popular places.
What was the South Bank before all this was put up in the 60s?
That's a very, very good question. A lot of it was marshland. In fact, actually, in the 1840s, when going back a little bit further, when they built Waterloo Station... that was all marshland. In fact, one of the roads is still called Lower Marsh. Okay. Because they wouldn't allow them. They wanted to build because, of course, you know, they wanted to connect to the city, so they wanted to have a bridge and a station the other side of the river, but the council or whoever, local people, wouldn't let them. So they had to build a station this side, and then they built one of the first tube lines, which is the Waterloo and City line, which actually then connects to the city.
Oh, right.
But here was just basically... The South Bank has always had a bum rap, even in Shakespearean days.
Yeah.
You know, it's where all the bad times, where the theatres were, where the bear baiting pits were, the brothels were, yeah. It's always had a bit of a bum rap, but now it's in the 60s when they built the National Theatre, and they built the Hayward Gallery and the Purcell Rooms, the concert rooms, and IBM is here. It's now turned into, as you can see, a very vibrant atmosphere, and it's lots more to come as we go along.
Well, yes, and another example of how the arts brings...
Well, just imagine in Shakespeare's time, you know, this is where, I mean, it might have been the arse end of town, as it were, mm-hmm. you know, where all the crap happened and all the horrible stuff, but it was still a vibrant atmosphere because that's where people really wanted to be. It's where you want to be.
Yeah, right.
That's all the fun bit. And then you go back across the river to, you know, be normal again, yeah. This is the only bit of beach just here on the Thames.
Oh, really?
And when we get down, you'll see there'll probably be some people making sand castles and other sand structures.
And people don't enjoy this beach like one does in California, say?
Well, I mean, it's not much of a beach, really, is it? It's about a 100-yard strip, about 15 feet wide.
And would you advise swimming in the Thames or no?
No.
It's a big no.
It's a lot cleaner than it used to be, but I certainly wouldn't recommend, not in this stretch. I mean, maybe further up river towards, Henley. I've actually have swam in the Thames there.
Well, we're done having children. We could probably risk it.
I think the word Thames, actually, the name Thames, actually comes from via Middle English, via a Celtic word, and I think it means grey or black or dirty, really? I think.
An ancient Roman word meaning waterborne virus.
Yes. So here we are. We're looking across the river to St. Paul's Cathedral, which was designed and built by Sir Christopher Wren. Or he was just Christopher Wren then. He became knighted whilst he was building. It took about 25 years to build. I think he died before it actually was topped out. So I don't think he actually saw it finished. It was finished in the 1680s, something like that, early 1690s. And it obviously rebuilt after the Great Fire of London, which destroyed most of the old Gothic. It was a very, very Gothic cathedral, the original St. Paul's. And this is a finely domed erection.
My favourite kind.
Also, you can't quite see it, but there is, we'll probably see it a bit further on, we'll see what's called the Monument, which was also built by Sir Christopher Wren, which was a monument to the Great Fire of London. And it's just a big pillar with a gold top, and I can't quite remember which direction, but if it were to go over east or west, it's the exact distance from where the Great Fire of London in 1666 started. Aha. In Pudding Lane. It's the height is the distance from it is from. Again, and of course we've got the brand new Millennium Bridge, or the Wobbly Bridge.
And which was famously destroyed in the second to last Harry Potter movie,
yes,
I think, if memory serves.
Oh, that's true, yes, yes. And now they've obviously rebuilt it for the London 2012 Games, which is kind of nice. Well, and they've also have the Olympic rings here on a barge, we've noticed.
Well, and they called it the Millennium Bridge, the Wobbly Bridge, because on the day it opened, so many people walked across it. And wobbled.
As Quincy said, it was something to do with the resonance of the bridge as people walked across it.
Right.
Well, and here we are at the Globe, yes.
Shakespeare's Globe.
Just past the Wobbly Bridge, there is the Globe, which we will
but not apparently on the actual site.
No,
where
sadly, the original site, I believe, was it's only about 50 meters or so away from the original site.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think there are already buildings on the original site, but this was a site which was purchased by the driving force behind this was Sam Wanamaker.
Yeah, an American actor.
Yes, and his daughter Zoe Wanamaker as well has taken it on board. Mark Rylance obviously was an artistic director. I think is he still? I believe he still is.
Yes. I'm
or maybe he took it over for a bit. But it's... I did go in when it was... I went in when it was being built, so it wasn't finished. But they have used all the original material as much as they can. The only modifications they've had to use are obviously health and safety features, like they've had to have a certain amount of exits.
Right.
But other than that, it is as authentic as you possibly could get. And based on original drawings and pictures that survive, although there aren't that many, so they've probably had to make a few things up. But it is quite a stunning bit of architecture. It's quite beautiful, really.
It is.
And of course, that's the way, Shakespeare in Love was filmed. A lot of the sequences in that were filmed on the stage there.
Were they actually filmed on the stage there?
Absolutely, yes.
I love that documentary.
It's a lovely documentary, yes.
It was interesting, they said on the Globe tour that across the river, theater and bear baiting and cockfighting and prostitution was not allowed. But the bishop controlled this side of the river. Right. And that was all fine with him because it made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There's a great story, I think, in 1599, Shakespeare and his fellow friends tried to move the original theatre that they had. I think it was the Curtain, which was north of the Thames. They tried to move it because they couldn't...
They owned the theatre, but not the land.
They owned the theatre, but not the land, but they had land on the south bank. So what they did over the winter, they couldn't take it over London Bridge because of the high taxes. I mean, if you went anywhere near the bridge, you'd have to pay all these levies and taxes. So what they ended up doing over the winter, when it was Thames had frozen over, they ended up dragging all the big timber beams across the river during the winter.
Yeah,
and that's how they could get it. And they moved most of the timber over, so they rebuilt. I think they rebuilt the Globe Theatre, it ended up turning into.
It's a great story.
And we're now coming up to the Golden Hind. Well, it's not the real Golden Hind, it's a replica. I think the original rotted in Deptford Dock about 200 years ago. But this is the ship of Sir Francis Drake, who was the first person to circumnavigate the globe. It was originally called the Pelican, but he renamed it in honour of his patron, Sir somebody or other, whose motto basically was the female deer, which is obviously is what the hind is.
So the Golden Hind has nothing to do with San Francisco?
No. It is an old, as you can see, a very tiny, tiny little ship. But it makes it really, really fast.
Yeah.
It also has a great name.
It's got a Golden Hind, yes. And it's quite interestingly about Sir Francis Drake. I mean, he obviously helped out at the in the 1588 the Spanish Armada, along with fellow south of England man. Walter Raleigh, interestingly, he died of dysentery off the coast of Panama in I think 1596, and I believe he was buried in his full armour in a lead-lined coffin off the coast of Panama. And actually, this has been in the news recently. They're actually trying to find this because it's apparently be worth billions of pounds. They both find Sir Francis Drake coffin
with his armor and bones.
With his armor in a lead-lined coffin, yes, and his dysentery, yes. I think they're specifically after that.
Because he's a vampire,
yes,
obviously.
Clearly. So that's been in the news recently. They're trying to find where he's buried. They've not found him yet. And he travelled all around the world. He circumnavigated the globe.
He was the second person after Magellan, right?
Well, technically, Magellan died halfway around that voyage, so technically he was the first.
Oh.
To be honest. Magellan's boat did actually make it all the way around, but he didn't, so
Britain rules the waves and waves the rules. Is that how that works, Davey?
Yes, something like that. But yes, it's built for speed basically and not for anything else. You can't really you can't really see it defending itself against the big warships of the time.
But it can outrun them.
It can certainly outrun them, yeah, that was the idea.
But the only thing that would make this day better is if we didn't have to do two shows.
Okay, right. Shall we just cancel?
Yeah.
And stay here?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Sorry, folks who are coming to the matinee. Sorry.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your backward entomologies via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to Webmaster Matt Rippey, Isambard Kingdom Brunel impersonator Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Amy Elizabeth. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Jenny Barnett from BBC Radio London 94.9 and to Davey and Catherine Naylor, who will share with us one of her favorite films. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 296, 888ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Just basically South Bank.
One of my favorite films is set around here, Indiscreet, with Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant.
Oh.
Absolutely divine.
And she's paralyzed, but you can't bring herself to tell him.
He's trying to convince her that she's crazy.
That's gaslight.
Oh, okay.
He tells her he's married. And he's
right.
Not really.
Right,
yeah. So she thinks she's having an affair with a married man, and in fact, they're not.
It's where she's had to sleep with Claude Rains, the Nazi.
See, that's the one I thought it was. It's a really long staircase.
With a shining glass of milk.
And the kid pedaling down the hallway on the little car.
Right, and the
twins
in the elevator.
Are we mixing our movies?
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.